Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and
moving. Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news with Willem van Denderen shortly. And as always, we'll be joined during the show by our former ITN journo turned pundit, Derek Dyson. Now, the A-League men's competition kicked off last weekend, but this week it will take a backseat to the Matildas' blockbuster doubleheader against the might of the US national women's team. The first time the world's leading women's team has visited Australia since the Sydney 2000 Olympics, where the previous record crowd for a women's football match was set in this country and is likely to be broken at Homebush on Saturday night. The last time these two met was, of course, at this year's Tokyo Olympics in August when the US won 4-3 in the bronze medal match. Can Australia and our national side begin the road to the 2023 World Cup by shocking the football world? Former Matilda and now key member of the 10 Paramount Plus commentary team, Georgia Yeoman-Dale, will join us to have a yarn about just how high our expectations should be. We'll continue the international discussion with Willem on the Matildas and Socceroos. Rob Tanner from The Athletic will join us to look at the latest in the Premier League, in particular the fallout from what has to be one of the most drawn-out sackings in the history of football, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer finally giving his marching orders after a calamitous loss to Watford at Vicarage Road. And, of course, we'll wrap it up with an extended stoppage time, as we do these days, with Derek. And Willem is on the line, but Ed, you are still on your overseas odyssey, still in Bangkok. How are things going over there, my friend?
All is well, Rob. Yeah, no problems over here. Enjoying my time with my colleagues and the projects that I'm working through. But yeah, really looking forward to today's show, in particular the story around Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, OGS, I think that one is an interesting one, and it reflects to his appointment, doesn't it, in relation to just his suitability to take on a big club. And has the timing of his sacking now meant that Manchester United have not a lot of options to consider for his replacement? So that'll be an interesting one to talk through with Rob Tanner when you and Derek do that. But also, just locally at home, the FA annual general meeting, in the past, these have been controversial sort of affairs with contested board positions and vote lobbying and so forth. This one, Rob, below the radar, all went through, no board contest. Joseph Carozzi and Amy Duggan elected unopposed. So that's a big achievement, I think, for the FA in relation to at least appearing from the outside looking in that unity may have returned to football politics for a moment anyway. What do you think,
well,
Willem?
Sorry to jump in there, Willem, but yes, it is Edge, isn't it? I mean, they always say that success starts in the top office, and if the board is getting elected unopposed, then that's always good news. So, yes, Willem, Edge asked you what you think. What do you think, mate?
I think it is good, Michael, certainly for Chris Nicol. It did definitely go under the radar. But there was another name that you didn't mention there. Lee Russell has been ratified as the new chair of the Women's Football Council. Now, Lee has been here, there and everywhere in terms of women's sports as a woman in terms of sports administration in Australia. She was the first woman, broke new ground as the CEO of Swimming Australia. She was also CEO of Netball Australia, and she's held a senior executive position at an AFL club. She's definitely been involved with the Essendon Football Club. What else can you tell us about what Lee's going to bring to football?
I think Lee Russell is a very experienced administrator, as you mentioned, Willem. I think they were after her for a little while. They drew up a short list of candidates for the Women's Standing Committee chairperson role to take over from Ros Moriarty, who, the wife of John Moriarty, who are very connected footballing family, the John Moriarty Foundation. So I know that there was three or four people shortlisted, and they went through a process of assessment. And Lee Russell, went to the top of the pile. And in particular, she suffered a bit of what I would consider poor treatment at the hand of sporting administrators, male ones in particular. So it's good to have someone of that ilk leading the Women's Standing Committee who can help keep blokes like Rob and I honest.
The Matildas host the first of two friendlies against the USA on Saturday, their last scheduled matches before January's Asian Cup. Over 35,000 tickets. Yes, it seems hard to believe, but that was reported by our good friend Jonathan Tannenwald over there in the US. 35,000 tickets have been sold for the clash at Stadium Australia, which will break the Matildas attendance record if all show up. Alana Kennedy has travelled, but is not expected to play in either match as she deals with a quad injury. But Rob, it's going to be a huge occasion out there at Parramatta, and what better way to celebrate than to get in the Wiggles.
Yeah, I love it. Always been a big fan of the Wiggles since they got going with the new lineup, the new yellow Wiggle and the various other skivvies. But look, in the serious department, it's a good sign because it indicates a real family-friendly nature around the Matildas, and that's what has been one of the key hallmarks of the Matilda brand for so long, hasn't it, that families can feel comfortable going along, they can bring their young kids along and enjoy an event of world class, but in a safe environment. So, no hats off to them. I really like that entertainment choice. But interesting with the Americans, though, that even though they are the reigning multiple World Cup champions, they've come to Australia with only 10 of their Olympic squad. It's obviously a growth and renewal under Vlatko Andonovski. They didn't achieve what they expected to achieve in Tokyo, but coming out to Australia to experience the travel, the stress, all of the pressures of being so far away from home, just a couple of years out from the World Cup.
Yeah, look, they have the luxury of being able to have a very deep squad, don't they, Rob? So do you blame them on flooding the sort of people from 10 to 35 in their list? I don't. If Australia had that luxury, I think we'd be doing the same thing. So they've got an ability to bring on some younger players, and they'll be as competitive as you possibly can imagine. They could feel 3 or 4 teams and make World Cup semi-finals, I think.
Well, I wouldn't compare it to say the big European clubs coming to Australia and not bringing their big names, because in Australia, I don't know whether I'm wrong about this, but my perception of this is that whilst there is a core group of the American national women's side who are well-known names in I would think junior levels of Matilda support young kids, it's really the Australian big names which they're going to see. Yeah, so that's probably a good thing in that respect.
Certainly, Rob. What's next, Willem?
Paramount Plus, Michael, their A-League broadcasting era got off to a stuttering start last weekend, particularly around Saturday evening's simultaneous fixtures. Viewers missed the opening minutes of Western United versus Melbourne Victory, while the inability to pause and rewind the live stream drew plenty of criticism. Apparent VAR incidents were also ignored, likely because much of the match was broadcast with a single camera. It was not up to scratch. They know that. We know that, everyone knows that, and weren't the Twitterati, the soccer Twitter, quick to initiate the pile on. Michael, I'm willing to cut them a little bit of slack, given it is the APL doing the broadcast, I believe. I'm going to throw to you in a second to flesh out just who is putting the broadcast together. But so it is APL, is it not? And then Paramount are sort of putting it out there. My question to you is the no pause and rewind function, though, that's Paramount. That's not the APL. So that's not something that's gone wrong on the night or on the weekend. That's something that's been clearly not lined up for a little while. And I think that's where the disappointment lies for me.
Yeah, obviously, this is a new broadcast model for the APL. So they've taken on the production of the broadcast themselves, and they're providing the feed to Paramount and wherever it goes around the world. If they've Sky Sports in New Zealand, YouTube for most other territories around the world, until they can set up some rights arrangements, that'll be the plan. That's no different to what the English Premier League do and Bundesliga do. They take on the production costs to manage them and also manage the quality of the content. It'll be a big learning curve, and I'm sure the APL will have a few teething issues as they work through early rounds of the season, but let's hope they get it organised quickly, and I'm sure Paramount Plus too, Willem, will have some teething problems. But I think this time around, I think we've got resources that are capable of sort of ironing out the little bugs that happen in these first few weeks. But I don't think we'll be seeing the return of Tuberman in year five of the agreement,
exactly
just quietly.
What I was thinking, that we didn't see Tuberman, and for those who do not get that that reference, it was obviously during a W League, or the then W League, was streaming, and there was some random guy at home in his bedroom who was pressing the buttons for the broadcast, and he's sitting there with his tuba in the background, infamously.
Heading to Saudi Arabia, Al Hilal have stamped themselves as the undisputed kings of Asia, claiming a record fourth continental club crown with a 2-0 win over Pohang Steelers in the Champions League final. Heading in as warm favourites, Al Hilal took the lead just 16 seconds in, courtesy of a bomb from well outside the box from Nasser El Dosri. Let's take a listen to a little bit of the local call. دورة في هذه المباراة كقلب دفاع بجانب جانغ هيون سو مباراة صعبة لكن ثقتنا كبيرة يا ناصر في الزعيم ناصر كرة Bomb, 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 indeed. Moussa Marega added a second in the second half. Hilal adding a second Champions League to their Asian club championships. Hang on, Michael. Asian club championships they won in 91 and 2000. Now, there's a lot of scepticism and a lot of critics around how Saudi Arabia have strengthened their grip on the football world. But don't let anyone tell you the man on the street doesn't love it just as much as anyone else. Bomb, 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 bomb.
I tell you what, that is a piece of commentary that was superb, Rob. Didn't understand a word of it, but I tell you what, I was excited. I think the first word I heard him say was
Allah, which the uninitiated is the Muslim Arabic word for God. But yeah, look, it's classic, isn't it? It just shows you the passion for football around the world. Clearly, an absolute full house.
It
there.
Does, and
stack right into it.
Rob, I'm going to interrupt as I am prone to do on this program. All I can tell you is that you know exactly what I'm going to say. There is a perception out there in the football world that the Middle East is not serious about football, but Saudi Arabia is one of the most serious football nations going around. They've got great tradition and heritage in that country. They have obviously deep resources, and they have real quality, which we're now obviously seeing. They've been proud participants in World Cups previously, and Al Hilal's success in the Asian Federation is testament to that, Willem, don't you think?
It is. And if you haven't seen Nasser El Dosri's goal, just 22 years old playing at left back, if you haven't seen his goal 16 seconds into a Champions League final, make sure you get on and see it. And well done to Alex Grant as well at Pohang. I think the general sentiment was that they'd done pretty well just to get there. But for a game that was played between a Saudi-speaking nation and a Korean-speaking nation, Alex did a fair bit of press on the English-speaking front. And I think he handled himself really well. So well done to him. He was a good representative of the club and of Australian football. And a final one, guys. Man United, they have sacked Ole Gunnar Solskjaer after that 4-1 loss to Watford, bringing a close his almost 3-year stint at the helm. Despite signing a 3-year extension less than a month ago, many considered Ole fortunate to have lasted as long as he did. He led United to third and second in the Premier League in his two full seasons in charge, and also led to the return of the Champions League. Post his sacking, classy and gracious as ever, he did have a bit of a chat to the Manchester United media arm. Let's have a listen now.
Hey. Great friends. I've reconnected with some great friends. New staff coming in. I've become really good friends with the other staff that was here when I was there. We're good friends, and we've connected. And that is that's what it's about at a club like this, with the fans, because the fans have been amazing from day one at Cardiff till the last one now. So top, and we'll see each other again.
Rob, it wasn't all terrible. That squad was a bit of a mess from pretty much the end of Ferguson's era through to Mourinho's era. I think he's turned them over pretty significantly now. Maybe they're no good because they can't win matches, but for Gunnar Solskjaer. But I think he's really turned the list around. 9-0 win against Southampton, and of course, two very famous nights away to PSG in the Champions League. But I think everybody knew at the end of the day he wasn't going to push late into a season and really challenge the likes of Klopp, Guardiola, Tuchel, or now Conte.
Yeah, we'll talk to Rob Tanner later in the show about it. But look, if there's one thing and one record that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer leaves Old Trafford with is his record as a classy operator and a yep. really decent guy. He's as loved now as he was when he first stepped through the door. He was clearly a man with limitations, got some good results. There were some highs, but he's shown on exposed form with his managerial career that he's not going to be one of the greats. You know, he might shock us and go off and recreate his career somewhere else, but it's a pretty long shot for anyone to expect that that's going to happen. But well done, Ole. You know, he had 3 years in the gig, and off he goes to another spot in the football firmament somewhere around the world. All right, well done, Edge. You sit tight. You're going to stick around, and we're going to talk to Georgia Yeomandale next. The Matildas' massive doubleheader against the U.S. national women's side over the next week. It's going to be a couple of blockbusters, and we're really looking forward to it. The former Matilda Georgia herself is with Channel 10 and Paramount Plus, and we'll talk to her after the break on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal
Box to Box, and we are all very excited about the Matildas doubleheader coming up against the world number one team, the US national women's football side. It's all in preparation for the 2023 World Cup, and it's going to start with a bang with a record crowd looking likely to be set on Saturday night. And from Channel 10, Paramount Plus is one of our favourite former Matildas and commentator, one of the important members of the commentary team at 10 Paramount Plus, Georgia Yeomandale. How are you, Georgia?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good to be on and great to be speaking about the Matildas again.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so exciting. And a question that I wanted to ask you as a former Matilda, I mean, our holy grail is to hold a medal, to get onto the podium of an Olympics or a World Cup. How would you describe the atmosphere in the dressing room when you've got elite players, some of the very best in the world, Sam Kerr, et al., facing off against this all-conquering side? How would you describe the attitude of our Matildas as they know that they are equipped and capable under Tony Gustafsson with the World Cup not far away of stepping up, but now is the time for them to do it and they have to do it?
Yeah, look, I think that it's all excitement around the group at the moment, and we've got a good core of those players who are so experienced playing international level, playing top level football for their clubs, and now even in the Champions League as well. So there's so much confidence about the group. They know their abilities and what they can do. And I think that it's going to be a really good test coming up against the US, because they always have been the benchmark for football globally for women's football. So it'll be great to see how we actually measure up against them, considering, you know, how well we're performing and where our squad is currently at.
Georgia, can I talk to you about some of the squad selections, because they're very interesting. For those people who follow women's football closely, there's been a couple of really young players who do show a lot of emerging talent, but maybe they were a shock to be included in the squad. And I'm talking about Briley Henry and Charlie Rule in particular. Can you talk us through your thoughts on their selections, what does it do to a young player who's selected out of the blue on potential rather than a body of form? You know, can you talk us through those selections, what you think and how it might impact them?
Yeah, look, I definitely can. Being one of those players who was selected at a young age, definitely based on potential at the time. I think that it is an interesting one, because Tony Gustafsson's looking at this squad and these friendlies with an eye on 2023. And he's been very clear about that through this whole process. Is he needs to be looking at what the squad's going to look like come that World Cup. And it's very important, given that, you know, we don't have a lot of depth in this squad, and that's been one issue and probably the main hindering factor of us doing better in major tournaments like the World Cup and the Olympics, is we're never able to rotate our squads. So bringing in the likes of Charlie Rule, Briley Henry and other young girls who have recently had their debut, it just gives them a little bit of a sniff of what it's like to be around the camp so that they get more familiar with it. And then by the time it's 2023, it's, you know, they're comfortable within that environment. They're comfortable playing international football. For me, Charlie Rule was, you know, was a surprise inclusion because she didn't play a lot of club football last year in the Women's A-League. Briley Henry, having played club with her, she's a fantastic player, person, and definitely striving for excellence. So I'm so happy to see her back in that camp. But I think that it's this whole squad, it's a good mix of experience, and then he's definitely got an eye on 2023 with the youth that he's bringing through.
Yeah, we certainly, I guess that the there's been a lot of W League experience, and I say W League because it's in the past, that has got an opportunity. I'm talking about the Claire Wheelers, the Remy Simpsons, the Angela Beards. They have a very big body of work behind them, so you sort of can understand that they get an opportunity to cut their teeth, and importantly for Gustafsson to look at them. When you talk about Briley Henry, you know, her selection over a Melina Ayres, for example, for me is a very controversial one because, you know, Melina had such a stellar W League season last year. It just sends the message that maybe you can do you can play as well as you can play and have a stellar season, and you just might be overlooked. And potential versus form is the Matildas caps being handed out on potential a good thing for the culture of developing female footballers in Australia? I'm just not sure.
Yeah, no, I totally understand where you're coming from. I think that Melina is season after season is proving that she is a top footballer in Australia. I think that there's a big level difference between the W League, now A League women, and international football. And I think that it's about looking at players who they believe can step up and play at that international level, which is very different to clubland. And we have seen in the past players who are fantastic in the W League and then unable to step up at international level. Does Melina Ayres deserve a chance to come into a camp? Yeah, probably. I think that based off her club football, she does. Briley Henry has had experience in like the talent ID camps and also at junior Matilda's sort of level. And when those players are continuing to shine throughout the system, then they know that they've got that potential to be able to step up and be a star at international level. Whereas if we're just looking at, from a club perspective, players who are standing out, then you're unsure when it comes to the increased physical demands of international football, can that player actually step up?
Georgia, huge friendlies against Brazil, huge friendlies against the USA. We've got a Women's World Cup on home soil on the horizon, but it's all been lost in the wash a little bit. We've got an Asian Cup starting in January. How do you think the side is tracking in terms of winning that tournament? And do you think the Australian football public has put enough emphasis on this upcoming tournament? Do you think if they win it, that the team will be given plaudits for winning it? Because trophies are trophies, and we want to see this side win trophies and win major tournaments and getting in the habit of doing so. I mean, it's not a bad thing. So do you think there's been enough emphasis put on this Asian Cup starting in Jan?
No, probably not. And I think that that is a product of the fact that usually we use the Asian Cup to qualify for the World Cup. So there's always hype around that because you're leading into something that has, without, you know, taking away from what the tournament is, a means to an end. You need to qualify for the World Cup. We're in a very different situation this time around, being hosts, that we automatically qualify, that we're automatically seeded, so our FIFA rankings isn't as important going into the FIFA Women's World Cup. So then you kind of look at the Asian Cup, okay, well, what are we looking to get out of it? There's obviously, yes, we're always looking to win trophies, and I think that we need to strive and continue to strive to be number one in Asia, because that is very achievable and we should be doing that right now. It shouldn't even be a question in our mind, and we should be able to go with not even our full strength side and still compete and win that trophy. That's where these Matildas players are at in against the rest of Asia, except for maybe Japan, who obviously are always a strong contingent in themselves. But the other thing that you then, the flip side of that is how many games have we got leading up to the World Cup in 2023? And how many of those games can we use to get international experience into the younger players who are good enough to be playing international football, but they need the experience to be superstars come 2023. So there is a balance between those two elements of winning the tournament and also getting experience. But again, at the end of the day, it's international football. This is our national women's football team, and they need to be looking to win this tournament. And I think that, you know, more needs to be said about them going there to win it.
That's a very good point you make. And the Asian Cup is a very winnable tournament for the Matildas. We've had some disappointments in the past. The last edition in Jordan, where we got rolled by Japan in the final, comes to mind. So that's a tournament we should be winning. I'm going to change tack, and there's been some big news today as we record this interview, Georgia, for A-League Women. A former Matilda, Lisa Devanna, has been announced as being signed by Perth Glory for the upcoming A-League Women season. Obviously, with the latest news around, that's going to be received by the mainstream media in a big way. Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, no one was expecting Lisa to play. We know her talents, and we know how effective she was for Melbourne Victory last year, and now playing back for a home team club. That's an interesting development for the A-League women's season coming up.
Yeah, I think that interesting is the best way to put that. I wasn't completely shocked, and that was just based on a few social media slips that Perth Glory had throughout the pre-season with a few images of Lisa in the background. So it was always kind of a question mark of was she was actually going to make the leap to come back and play, given she made a bit of hype around retiring from the domestic league. And then obviously there was everything that was going on leading into those games against Brazil with the serious allegations that came out as well. So I think all of that put to the side, I think that it's a fantastic thing for the A-League women and for domestic football to have Lisa back in the competition. She showed last year she's still got, you know, the quality to be able to be a superstar in this league. And I think that she's going to, you know, attract fans because of her footballing ability. She's going to be able to pass on footballing knowledge to younger teammates in Perth Glory as well. So I think it's a positive thing whenever you've got a big star coming back and playing in the league. It can only lift the quality of the league. But definitely an interesting development today.
Yeah, it sure was, Georgia. And I guess the thing is, I mean, none of us on the outside know the internal machinations of what's gone on and the investigations that are going to take place. But what we do know is that there needs to be some healing and some resolution for a lot of people around that era, and that it would be good for everybody in Australian football if Lisa can become another part of the Matildas fold again, as opposed to feeling like an outsider as she has done in recent times. So if that can happen, that can only be a positive. So hopefully we see that as part of the whole process of Lisa returning to the top flight competition in Australia. Georgia, we're loving your work on 10 and Paramount Plus. The football that we're seeing both with the Matildas and the men's sides being covered really well. Yeah, there's been a few technical glitches, but we'd expect those to happen along the way, and we're really looking forward to the coverage over the next week from Sydney and from Homebush of these two blockbuster matches against the US national women's side. So thanks for joining us, and keep up the excellent work.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on. Always fun.
Excellent. Georgia Yamandale, former Matilda and a key part of the commentary group, the punditry group at Channel 10 and Paramount Plus. If you haven't got Paramount Plus, I know we've talked about the highs and lows, but we all remember from the World Cup in Optus where Optus started and where they've come to. So so we encourage you to support the platform. And if you support football in this country, then you should get a subscription and start watching it and find out for yourself. Okay, before we go to the break, I want to talk to you about our good friends at Chemist Warehouse, because they are having their Black Friday sale this Friday, Saturday and Sunday, where you'll get an extra 10% off all the big brands store-wide. That's an extra 10% off store-wide. Now, you know they've already got the lowest prices every single day, so to get an extra 10% for 3 days at Chemist Warehouse over the Black Friday sale, well, you got to get in there and get prepared for Christmas and stock up for your family. So Chemist Warehouse, they are great friends and supporters on this show, Box to Box, and we just would not exist without them. Okay, well, stick around. There's still plenty to go on the show. We've got a little bit more to discuss around the Matildas and the Socceroos with Willem after the break. We've got Rob Tanner then, and Derek will wrap up the Champions League at the back end of the show. So stick around. That's all next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Box to Box. Great chat with Georgia Yamandale. They're very excited about the prospects of the Matildas on the home track. They did well against Brazil. Hopefully we're going to get some good results against the US national women's side, Willem. But apart from those fixtures, you've got a stack more going on the international front.
I certainly do, Rob, and we'll start with Socceroos and Matilda's Central for the Green and Gold Army. Where, ask yourself, do you picture yourself in 12 months' time? If it's not in Qatar, living your best life with the Green and Gold Army, I don't know what you're thinking. Get onto that mailing list, for goodness sakes, at ggatravel.com.au and register your interest for next year's World Cup. Packages are imminent, Michael, and one of your favourites for the Matildas, she's going to be hopefully starring again this weekend, is Hayley Rasso, and she's helped Man City to a vital 3 points with 2 goals off the bench in a 5-0 win over the Villa. Having battled a shoulder injury of late, Rasso finished a tough chance on 77 minutes, set up a teammate for another a minute later, and buried her second on 81, so 3 involvements in 4 minutes back to form after a bit of an injury concern.
The kamikaze kid, she's back in the the setup at Manchester City, and she'll be back in the Matildas setup. I think Rob would agree the Matildas are a better team with Hayley in it than out of it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but I know you mentioned at the top of the show, like, we don't have the luxury of depth that that the Americans do, but we certainly have a lot more depth than a lot of other international sides. So as you say, blooding players that you know, we need to see on the international stage. You know, one absence means it's an opportunity for someone else.
Elsewhere, Sam Kerr netted 3 of her own as Chelsea enjoyed a 5-0 win over Birmingham. That takes Sam's season tally to 9. And Steph Catley put in a full 90 for Arsenal in a 2-0 win over Man United. In France, Ellie Carpenter helped open the scoring for Lyon in a 4-0 win. They are 9 wins from 9 atop the table, so expect some more silverware headed their way. And at Montpellier, Mary Fowler played another almost full match in their 3rd win on the bounce, so they're up to 5th in the 12-team competition. And just like with the Matildas now, Mary over the past couple of months has graduated from a bit part contributor off the bench to certainly a senior player now. And news breaking on Thursday afternoon, Lisa Devanna will return to Perth Glory for a 3rd stint in purple, this A-League women's side, which starts next Friday the 3rd. 2008-09 and 2012-13 were her stints with one of the only clubs where she hasn't lifted the W League. She's thanked Tony Sage for setting aside the time to meet her in person, and coach Alex Aparkas for creating a safe, supportive environment. On to the gents. Michael, another one of your favourites was the story this week, the boiler, Martin Boyle, who helped cause a boil over for Hibs in the Scottish League Cup semi-final.
It's Boyle! It's a hat-trick! It's a 3-0 lead for Hibs! They're building their Hampden dreams again!
Yes, 3 goals against Rangers puts them through to a meeting with Celtic in the final on December 19th at Hampden. That's very tasty indeed from an Australian perspective. Down the grades in England, really positive signs for Mas Luongo. He's played a full match for Sheffield Wednesday, a 3-2 win over Accrington Stanley. Michael, another who we will follow closely as he continues his tentative return to the pitch, hopefully back where he belongs in the Championship and in the green and gold.
Yeah, one of the items that I spoke to Graham Arnold about when I saw him the day after our draw to China, I should say, was the lack of depth that we had at the moment because of injuries. So Massimo Luongo running around now, we might just think, oh, that's a good stepping stone. But if he can string some games together, he's the sort of player that could come into the squad and make a little bit of an impact in the remaining World Cup qualifiers if he can build some fitness and form. So that little slither of news is a good one. Maybe not for the starting 11 in the Socceroos, but to adding depth and pressure on the group that are trying to get into the squad, that's a good sign. And we know his quality. If he can get right again, he's good enough to play for the Socceroos.
To Japan to finish Socceroos Matilda Central, Thomas Deng looks to have been released by Urawa Reds after what was a promising but pretty unfulfilled injury hit couple of seasons in the end. So interested to see whether he returns home or stays in Japan. But in better news, Pete Klimovsky signed on for another season with Yamagata Montedeo. He, of course, made that scorching start. They've leveled out a little bit and sit seventh towards the end of the season. But you'd suspect he could do some serious damage with a transfer window and pre-season. Moving on, Mark Bosnich has slammed Graham Arnold for his continual positivity in the face of poor results, stating the coach's narrative is setting the public up for disappointment. Speaking on Stan Sport FC, Bosnich and Craig Foster criticised Arnold's assertion the side were playing great before the 1-1 draw with China. Let's take a listen.
We all make mistakes, and we've all got to look at ourselves and that. But this is where you need someone around you to say, listen, Gaffer, Boss, Graham, don't be saying things like this. Because, not only do the footballing public will see through it, but you're setting all of us up. You're putting a target on us. Yeah? So, if he said it after the Saudi Arabian game, but how do you say you're playing great? And we've got the stats to back it up. What stats?
It went on and it got a little bit more fiery than that. But Rob, I guess we can add this to the catalogue of TV moments we have here in Australia where impassioned chat about our national team gets a little bit unhinged and can be. It had shades of Postecoglou and Craig Foster. But there are plenty here in Victoria who have are critical of the way that Ange Postecoglou was treated in the media. So I guess all we can really ask is that Graham Arnold faces the same questions that Postecoglou did during the 2018 World Cup qualifying campaign. And so to Boz and Foz, they've got the ball rolling and well done to them this week.
It wasn't quite to the standard of Les Murray and Foz piling into Ange Postecoglou all those years ago. Boz, didn't miss. But to be honest, he was, as much as we love Arnie, I think he was right. I mean, at a certain point, you've got to hit the mark with some sort of accurate home truths. And at the moment, that does not seem what we're hearing from Arnie. So maybe this will just rattle a few cages, and hopefully, even if it upsets the boys and gets them to pull their finger out and get a result, then, mate, we'll all look back and call him a genius.
Hey, look, far be it for me to go to the rescue of Graham Arnold and his public perception, but can we have a bit of a reality check here? We've lost one game out of the last, how many, Willem? 12 or 13 or 14
About
games? I mean,
15, because it was 15 11 games. And then,
Yeah. So can we just have a bit of a reality check here? Yes, we're in a dogfight to qualify for the World Cup, and can we just respect the opposition for a little bit? Asia's an improving opposition.
We've had a development in the opposition edge. We're just talking about 2 points from three matches in critical qualifiers. We've dropped from trying to take top spot to clinging to third. And if we don't turn this around pretty quickly, then we're in deep doo-doo.
The issue the premise of this chat wasn't about whether the team's playing well or not. It was about the public narrative of Graham Arnold coming out and saying we're playing great and trying to, is he trying to pull the wool over our eyes as a football public? Is he thinking we're naive and we're going to buy that? No, not at all.
Well, if you watch the game in China, for the first 70 minutes, they hardly had a look in. It was our inability to convert. So you could say that we didn't convert, but we were playing well in the first 70 minutes. It's arguing the toss a little bit, but Bozza's entitled to his opinion, and I'm entitled to throw a few stats in his direction, like one loss out of the last 15 or 16, Bozza. Get behind the team. They've got some work to do. We understand that's not easy, but let's get them there.
Okay, guys, on to the A-League. Going to pull out a couple of big storylines that came out of the first week of matches and onto the A-League men's, I should say, and chew the fat on them. The first one was a couple of teams that really impressed me, and they were Adelaide and Brisbane. There's been some real symmetry about these two clubs over the past 18 months. Carl Viet and Warren Moon both having played for the clubs, then cut their teeth in the state level as young coaches. They're both brought through a lot of young local talent into their squads. And it looks like that symmetry is set to continue with what's been some more further layers and improvement over the off-season. So Brisbane 2-1, they went down to Melbourne City. They were 2-0 down for the bulk of the game, but really kicked into gear and they pulled two back. One of them was chalked out, but you're never going to play a full game in round one. And Adelaide was similar. They looked awesome in the first 30 minutes and it looked like a case of how many against Perth before Perth got their act together. But Michael, I think both of these sides look like the preseason hasn't been wasted. And for these two young coaches, more improvement is on the way.
Absolutely. And teams with, obviously in the A-League, teams with something to prove, generally have a good motivated pre-season. They've done that. They've come out firing in the first game and they've sort of put a bit of a marker up there. Let's just see if they can keep the form going. But yeah, I like the early signs, Willem, and they were really exciting little packages of play at different stages during those games for those two sides. And I like the Costa Rican Ureña. I mean, we saw his... for Central Coast, we saw his ability last year, but I thought he had a very good game. What did you think about his game?
Yeah, we'll get onto the Central Coast in a little bit. Just rounding off on Adelaide and Brisbane. Adelaide, 9 of the 11 they put out there were at the club last year, and Isaias was one of the two, and he pretty much is read through and through. And for Brisbane, 8 of the 11 were out there last season. So I suppose when you've got young coaches, both have gone for stability over the off season. Let's head on to Central Coast. Michael Ureña, he's not the only senior head still there as well. They've got much of the defensive framework still there as well. Birigidi, Ruang Tongik, Kai Rolls, and then Oli Bozanic there as well in the holding role. I think at the start of every season, we always look to Central Coast and Newcastle to round out the bottom of the table, and Central Coast, rather, after last season, had further to fall and a lot more to lose. But I think, Rob, you've got the affinity with the Gosford region. I think after the F3 derby, we saw that, look, maybe they're not going to fly as high as they did last season, but I think things are going to be all right for them.
Yeah, well, they were amazing under Alan Stachic at the beginning of last season, and they had a wobble mid-season where everyone thought it was going to fall apart, and then got it together and had a good run into the finals. So I love the fact that that we're now seeing a more understated environment around the club, but equally we're seeing a performance on the park against a real blood rival in Newcastle Jets in a derby, and some of these senior players that have stuck around. There's a lot to like about the Mariners for the rest of the season, as there is the Jets. I think Arthur Pappas needs to be given some credit, even though they didn't get the chocolates on the weekend.
Yeah, Arthur Pappas has had obviously a diverse and sort of exotic coaching, not apprenticeship, but coaching career to this point. And so his recruits could be fascinating. Mikkel Tadzer and Siatravanis at first looked really sharp. Daniel Pena, I think we've all seen a lot of him on sort of Monday night futsal, didn't really want to pass the ball too much, but he should come good. So the standard of recruiting there, Michael, could actually be one of the more fascinating subplots of this season.
Absolutely. I mean, let's give Arthur a few weeks to get that team together. He's brought them from literally all over the world, hasn't he, Willem? So you imagine it's going to take a little bit of time for them to get their act together. But they weren't disgraced in defeat, were they?
No, not at all. No, it was a really, really good match, actually. Probably one of the better ones of the weekend. And the final point I want to bring up is that, well, it's around MacArthur Bulls. We know that Wellington are going to be away from home until well into 2022. Perth Glory are about to start 8 matches on the road as well. They won't be home till mid-January. And it looks like MacArthur could well be set for a similar spell away from Campbelltown after their renovation gone wrong on the eve of the season. They've blamed the council for keeping them in the dark until they turned up on Friday ahead of Sunday's match against Wellington. Rob, does that check out? Would you not have had someone at the club around the ground earlier than 2 days out?
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? I mean, the Campbelltown Stadium is a decent venue. It's not a venue like Bankwest Stadium or Amy Park or any of the other multi-purpose state-of-the-art stadiums. But it's hosted professional sport for a long time now, and whilst the local council is going to have to take their fair share of the blame, the club does have to take some responsibility and can't palm it all off. And the fact that they're only in their second season and building a support base and had to shift the match to Newcastle, against Wellington, that's not good enough. I mean, these are not the sorts of things that we need to see under the new era, the new regime of the clubs running the competition.
Not at all. So, Michael, their next match is on the 5th of December against Central Coast. That's their next home match, I should say. If, as looks to be the case, that ground needs a full relay, there's no way that it'll be ready. So, yeah, some strange management continuing to sort of circle MacArthur. I think that Mark Milligan departure in particular has a little bit more to play out. I think that stinks. Michael, MacArthur, yeah, what's your take on it?
Yeah, look, there's so many questions, aren't they? I mean, how do you, like, you summarised it very well and Rob's comments were very appropriate. How do you find out a couple of days before the first game that your ground's no good? Don't know about that.
Yeah, you'd think you'd be building that up as a big
round one.
Yeah,
I'd have to say that, you know, they can blame the council. Or, yeah, that that's going to dislodge their early part of the season, you would think.
All right, Willem, well done. Nice little package there, particularly, you know, an opening round of highs and lows in the A-League. But, look, I've had a bit of a play around with the Paramount Plus app and it's starting, the interface is starting to become more familiar with me, to me, and, you know, the full matches, the mini matches and the highlight packages. So once they iron out some of these glitches, I think we've got something to really look forward to, especially where we were coming from in the days of the Foxtel deal falling off a perch. I mean, we've got to remember the criticisms and the concern that were going on around the time to reflect on, you know, 1 weekend of football. So so that's what's, we should all be giving them a bit of space. Anyway, after the break, stick around because we're going to chat to our old mate from The Athletic, Rob Tanner. Rob, there's plenty to talk about. Obviously, we want to reflect on the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer departure from Manchester United in a little more detail and who's next cab off the rank. It's going to be an interesting time around Old Trafford. Rob Tanner next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. And it's always a good episode of Box to Box when our next guest is on the show because he's been with us pretty much since the very start, back to the 2015-16 season when he was writing for the Leicester Mercury, as he had done for so many years on the Foxes as they went from 5,000 to one shots to Premier League glory. He's now with The Athletic and is a regular to this day. Rob Tanner, how are you, Rob?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Really good, mate. Really good. We're going to cover sort of a wide range of Premier League issues after the international break. But the obvious one to get started on is the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer story. It sort of seems almost like a Shakespearean tragedy the way that that his managerial career played out, doesn't it? That there was hope and then it was taken away from him and then he'd get a result and then it was taken away and everyone loves Ole, but sadly, he gets the result against, well, they didn't get the result against Watford at Vicarage Road 4-1, and they just pulled the rug. I think the board meeting was going on in the second half live as the game was still being played out.
Yeah, it's been dragging on as long as a Shakespearean play as well. This, I mean, ever since he was appointed, I can imagine it started, but people were speculating that he wouldn't be in the job that long because of his background as a coach, and he did quite well for a while, I felt. Although you never really thought that he was going to be the coach that was going to take United back to the glory days and back to the top table of European football, but for a while he threatened to defy that sort of expectation. But in the end, it's been a real struggle for him this year, and he's been let down by a number of his senior players, I would suggest. I mean, certainly their form, it's been baffling. I saw them live against Leicester, and Leicester are having a difficult season themselves, but they blew them away late on in that game. United looked so open. They look like they're going to concede goals. And it's been a similar story ever since. And I think, in the end, I think that the board wanted to give him as long as possible. They felt invested in Ole because he's one of their own. He's achieved so much as a player at the club. And it sort of reflects on them if he turned out to be a failure. And that's why it kept going on and on and on, because they wanted to give him more chance. And they didn't seem to have a plan for a succession as well, which, for a club of that level, I'm amazed. And still now, we're not sure what their plan is after they've released him. So it's all a bit of a mess at Man United. And there's talk of an interim manager coming, but they said they're going to try and get an interim manager in. And I think that's probably the right move, because they need to take a bit of time on their next appointment, because since Sir Alex Ferguson, it's been so up and down for them. And you'd expect United to be consistently challenging the top end of the Premier League, but not been the case. So they need to make the right appointment this time.
Rob, what is going on at Manchester United? Like, you know, got to call it like it is. You know, you mentioned post Ferguson and, you know, Arsenal, you know, to an extent of suffering from that hangover of the sort of dynastic manager, and where do you move from there? But they went for David Moyes, then you sort of a Van Gaal, you know, in the kind of, you know, September of his career, a burnt out Jose Mourinho. Then they've stuck with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who's only thing on his track record was winning the Norwegian league. This club is regularly, we have it rammed down our throats every week that they're the best, they're the biggest club in the world. You know, the rivals have gone and got the best managers out there, Guardiola, Klopp and Tuchel. And Manchester United stuck around for 3 years with an interim manager. I mean, this isn't the actions of the biggest club in the world, is it?
Well, no, and you can see why there's been so many protests from United fans. I mean, they're so disenchanted with some of the policy. I mean, there doesn't seem to be a policy. There doesn't seem to be a philosophy at the club. There doesn't seem to be the direction, a clear direction of how they want to proceed, what sort of football they want to play. I mean, as you listed off those names, I mean, that's a right eclectic mix of different characters, different coaches, different philosophies. And, you know, there's no real consistency there. That's why, you know, you got Pep Guardiola. He's been in at Man City for a while now. He's got a clear philosophy, and Man City buy into that. Chelsea have been up and down, but you can see Thomas Tuchel, you know, the process they've gone through, bringing him in and now getting their rewards there as well. United must be looking at that now thinking, we've got to do the same. We've got to go and get a top, top coach in now and give him time to sort this out. And it looks like Pochettino is the man that, I mean, he was linked with the job in the past and it never came off. But this time, possibly, they might land Pochettino from PSG. A draw of the Premier League more than an indictment on PSG as a club, but that would be an interesting appointment, and I think that one might be the one that would bring Man United eventually back to that top table again.
United, obviously, the one thing that has been their strategy, of course, has been acquisition of a number of different players. They're stockpiling talent from all over Europe, and some of it doesn't get in the team. Do you think under Carrick or under Ernesto Valverde, whoever might come in, there is an opportunity for, goodness gracious, Jadon Sancho, who he scored a great goal, you know, this week. Donny van der Beek, even some of the sort of quote-unquote fringe players, whether they be Rashford, Martial, etc. I mean, there's got to be opportunities for these guys because the other lot are just not cutting it, are they?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they've got some good young players at United that are coming through as well. But, you know, they need direction. They need to be clear in what their roles are when they play, these young players. And it seems to have been so scattergun, so inconsistent and unclear, you know, that the players seem destabilised in some way. I mean, I saw flashes of United against Leicester where, you know, they had Greenwood and Rashford and they were running at pace at Leicester's defence. They were causing problems. And you thought, well, you know, as bad as it might be at the back, they could have the answer in attack if they stick with these youngers. But unfortunately, there's no consistency in who's performing. And I know Ronaldo, you can't, you know, he's a legend and he's come in and he doesn't put the work rate in at the top, but he's a goal poacher. He's still a clinical finisher. So that sort of changes the dynamic of their attack because they haven't got that energy in the attack. He needs people up around him to do the running for him. But then they put Cavani in alongside Ronaldo. So you've got two players that are coming to the end of their careers in attack. That's even less energy up there. Great experience, you know, clinical finishing, great quality, but they haven't got the energy. And if you've got to run in the Premier League, it is such an intense league. If you're below those intensity levels physically, then, you know, you're going to struggle to compete. I mean, I saw Chelsea last weekend against Leicester and their work rate was phenomenal. It was incredible. They outworked, out-hustled Leicester. They were so sharp to the ball. The movement was incredible. Their wing-backs were playing like strikers at the time. And N'Golo Kante, centre midfielder, supposed to be a defensive midfielder, was playing on the right wing. You know, they were so fluid in their movement. Leicester couldn't cope. United, when you play against them, there's nowhere near that intensity or that energy levels.
what is going on at Leicester City? Derek and I were having a discussion off air during the week with all of the talk around Manchester United and potential replacements for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Lots of conversation around Maurizio Pochettino, but one of the names that keeps on bobbing up is Brendan Rodgers. Are you concerned in any way that he may have his eye off the ball and that there might be a lack of focus at Leicester from the manager if he is potentially under consideration to move to Old Trafford?
It certainly hasn't helped the situation. This has been a really fractured sort of start to the season for Leicester, not helped by the injuries. I mean, they went into the season without Fofana, Evans, Justin, you know, several other injuries. I don't think there's hardly any of the first team players that haven't been affected either by an injury or illness so far this season. So there hasn't been the consistency in selection. Therefore, there hasn't been the consistency in terms of the formations. He's used several formations as well. There's lots of changes game by game. There's been no stability. And then you add to that the speculation, not just on Brendan Rodgers to Manchester United, and before that it was Newcastle, and before that it was Tottenham, and before that it was Arsenal. This constant speculation around Brendan, but there's also speculation around players as well. Tielemans not signing his new contract that's been on offer. Several others being linked with moves away. I mean, really, the only time that the national media seems to be writing about Leicester is in those sort of terms. Somebody else wants one of their players, or somebody wants Brendan. And I think the whole thing together has really just destabilised the club in many ways. And they, as I said to you about intensity, they're a team that they have to be at 100% to compete. They haven't got the deep squad of the sides that they aspire to compete with, the likes of Chelsea, which they have competed against very well in the previous two seasons, but look miles off it now. Because that level is just, if they come off it by 10%, they're not as effective. You know, the play is slower. They can't break sides down as easily. I mean, they've lost Tielemans again to an injury now. They've got Pereira out as well. So all these things, all these problems are mounting up for Brendan. So the last thing he needed was all the speculation around Man United. And speaking to the sources I know, he would be somebody they would admire, United, but I don't think he'd be their first choice. There's been a lot of speculation that he's verbally agreed to join them, that he's had conversations with them, which, as far as I can say, not true. There's been no approach to Leicester City either, and you'd have to have the permission of Leicester City to speak to Brendan. Otherwise, it's an illegal approach. I mean, he's contracted till 2025, so it's all been a bit of an unsettling sort of period for Brendan, and the fans reacted quite poorly to the defeat to Chelsea, not so much the defeat, the performance, because they really didn't lay a glove on Chelsea that day. So all these problems, and he's coming into a week now where their Europa League campaign is hanging in the balance. They've got to beat Legia Warsaw tonight to give them a chance of winning the group. And then they've got the return of Claudio Ranieri and Watford, who obviously had a great win over United last weekend, coming to the King Power Stadium on Sunday. And some fans have even suggested that if he loses both those games, it's time for Leicester to make a decision about his future, not Man United. So yeah, that's how quickly football can turn.
How quickly football can turn can probably also be applied to another team that have just popped into the top six out of nowhere, Wolves. Rob, I know you kind of cover the Midlands beat there for The Athletic. And, you know, they've gone from, you know, I certainly wrote them off at the start of the season. I had no idea who Bruno Lage was. They'd played, you know, finished last season particularly poorly, looked like they'd kind of burnt out, and potentially that project, you know, was kind of done. Very worried for Wolves this season, but they are the form team in the Premier League, and a 1-0 win over the other form team in the Premier League, West Ham, has put them right among it. What's your analysis of how Wolves have managed to turn this around?
And haven't they gone about it in a quiet way? I mean, nobody's been looking at Wolves this season, really. They've been, you know, chatting about the problems at Man United. West Ham have caught the eye with their fantastic start to the season. It's been more about the woes of other sides rather than the successes. But you're right. They had to go through a bit of a transition. I mean, Nuno had been such an influence at the club, Espirito Santo. But they played a certain way. It was effective for a while, but it looked like it ran its course. So they made the change, and it's taken a bit of a while for Bruno's more dynamic way of playing to filter through to this side. And but they've got so much quality, so much talent, and getting Jimenez firing again after his head injury is going to be such a big part of it. I mean, they did lose Diogo Jota to Liverpool as well, which was a big blow. I mean, people seem to think that Leicester, in a similar way, they seem to think that these clubs like Wolves and that can continue to challenge the elite of the Big Six, even when they've lost their best players. But they haven't got the strength of depth of the squads that they're competing against. So if you take out key players like Diogo Jota, it's going to take a while for the team to re-stabilise and go again. And Jimenez as well with his injury. So they look like a blunt force attacking-wise. I mean, I saw them start the season and the play was excellent. They just couldn't finish. But they looked like a decent side, but they just couldn't finish. Now, if they can add that cutting edge, which we've seen over the last few weeks, and more importantly, they're keeping clean sheets, which don't underestimate how important that is, then you will climb the table. So they're going about it in a very quiet but efficient way.
And an enjoyable team to watch as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Much more so than when they were under Nuno.
Yeah, exactly. And on my odyssey to the UK in 2018, the Molineux was one of the grounds that I went to, and there is some kind of atmosphere, especially when you hear the tune "Hi Ho Silver Lining" at the beginning of the match. And I mean, there's so many good things about the atmosphere at English football stadiums, and that's got one of the great atmospheres. And it gets the hair on the back of your neck standing up whenever you watch a Wolves match at home and see them doing so well. Rob, great to chat to you again, mate. It'll be an interesting few weeks coming up on the manager roundabout, and we'll talk to you maybe in a month or so and just find out where all of this lands, because there's one thing's for sure, in 4 weeks' time there'll be a lot of football stories emerging that we don't know of just yet.
There's always stories emerging. It's like a soap opera, the Premier League and English football in general. So, yeah, no problem.
Good on you, mate. Rob, stay well. And until next time, thanks again for joining us on the show. Okay, stick around. We're going to talk Champions League to wrap up this show on a range of different levels. It was just an amazing week of Champions League football, and we're going to talk about it all next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
It's stoppage time on Box to Box. Fourth official's given us a heap of time to wrap this thing up. And Derek, the Champions League, it was an entertaining week in Champions League, which told us a lot about a lot of clubs.
Yeah, the Champions League has just reached its fifth week, and a lot of the groups now starting to be decided. I thought the most impressive performance was Chelsea's absolute annihilation of Juventus, making amends for when they lost to the old lady earlier. And it's hard to think how they managed to do that based on this performance. There were goals from Chalabar, who increasingly impresses in a Chelsea shirt. Reece James is just, where did this player come from compared to what we saw in previous seasons? Callum Hudson-Odoi got on the score sheet. Even Timo Werner got on the score sheet. So Chelsea, this was a muscular, dominant display and very worthy, actually, of the champions of Europe in Group H. And they're now top of this group, with Juve on the same number of points. They're both through, but I felt like this was an absolute masterclass, and I think the rest of Europe will certainly be looking at them as the potential favourites, Rob.
Yeah, you're right there, Derek. Ever since Thomas Tuchel arrived at Stamford Bridge, everything he's touched has turned to gold. And it just shows you the contrast, doesn't it? I mean, on paper, the Manchester United squad is the equivalent of the Chelsea squad. It's a matter of, can the manager mould them into a team? And clearly Tuchel can and OGS couldn't.
Well, you mentioned Manchester United, and of course we spoke with Rob Tanner a little earlier about them. They, of course, have progressed as group winners in Michael Carrick's first game. Atlanta, who could only draw with Young Boys, but United won. And obviously, Jadon Sancho coming to the four in that game. So, despite all of United's woes domestically, The Champions League seems to be something of a relief to them, and they'll be very happy to be through.
Obviously, in match day six, which we've got coming up, there's going to be a lot of dead rubbers, and I obviously, really, apart from Group A and Group B, the rest of them are settled. And I was just wondering what you thought. This would be a good time for a few comments about the proposed changes to the Champions League for next year, which basically are designed to ensure that match day six remains relevant. Did you look at it the way I did and see that, you know, we basically have the favourites of all the groups going through. The only one to really reflect on is whether it's going to be Porto, Milan, or Atletico Madrid going through with Liverpool. But the rest of them, it's sort of business as usual, and match day six is going to be a bit humdrum, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Group G as well, Edge, the Lille, Salzburg, Seville, and Wolfsburg group. They could all qualify going into the last game. And, you know, that's just the quirk of the draw, isn't it? I don't know how these teams managed to get into this. I suppose Lille got through as the champions of France, and the coefficient, and Seville, obviously, with their Europa coefficient. But as you said, the rest of those groups, you know, Chelsea and Juve are done and dusted. Bayern were done and dusted long ago. It was still enjoyed. Lewandowski's overhead kick in the snow was a lovely goal. The bit of jeopardy there is between Barca and Benfica. Barca, a bit like Manchester United, not at the races at home, but somehow getting through their group. The one bolter story that we were all getting excited about, Sheriff. Well, Real shot the Sheriff, really, didn't they? And they're now Europa League bound. Liverpool, 100% record. Lots of 100% records, Edge. And yes, you're totally right. I think if you ask UEFA, they would say, well, you know, no, well, you wouldn't ask UEFA, but privately they would say this is exactly what they want. All the cream needs to rise to the top. And, really, you know, they want Liverpool, Manchester City, Ajax, Real, Bayern, United, Chelsea, Juve, and others getting through. But as the punter, particularly as a neutral, and as Arsenal fans, Edge, we are neutrals these days in this tournament. Yeah, of course, we'd love to see a little bit more jeopardy, and it would be great if they could look at the group stage and potentially balance things up so that when you get into that final day, that there's actually something to play for. What do you think, Willem?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You want jeopardy, and you want it to go as long as is possible. And I think most football fans generally tend to have a fair bit of cynicism around those sort of UEFA and FIFA direct lines. But Derek, I wanted to ask you a question. It came out of the AC Milan and the AC Milan match against Atletico Madrid. Now, there's a great history in French football. Didier Deschamps, Claude Makélélé, and N'Golo Kanté of the water carrier. I wonder if there's now a tradition developing of the fridge deliverer, because Junior Macias has popped up and he's kept AC Milan alive with a late header against Atletico Madrid that's kept them alive in the Champions League. And he's a fantastic story. He's now 30. Just 6 years ago at 24, he arrived from Brazil to Italy. He worked some tough menial jobs, including delivering fridges, and he's now a hero.
Oh, yes. And Milan, as you said, are back from the dead in this group. And, you know, contrary to some of the other teams we spoke about, domestically playing extremely well and then going to Atletico and winning their away. That's one of the toughest away days in Europe, I would suggest, outside of Anfield and a few others. You know, and you're right, it is a super story. And thankfully, as we know, Liverpool, you know, they've won their group. But yeah, Milan, Porto, Atletico, they're all in the mix. And yeah, we'll see if the fridge deliverer can come to the party once again. And probably just a note before we move on the City PSG game. You know, that's the Abu Dhabi versus Qatar. It's the two super super rich clubs of the league at the moment coming together. But chalk and cheese, gentlemen. Despite the Mbappe, I've caught a bit of the edges there. Mbappe goal, putting them ahead. City played extremely well. There would have been a goal for Mahrez had it gone in. It would have been goal of the season across all of Europe. Just a stunning move. And of course, Sterling and Jesus got the job done. So I think, you know, yes, you can have all the money, and this is a word for Newcastle to go, yes, you got all the money, but Manchester City, yes, they can buy the players, but God, they've got a good coach and they've got good strategy and they've got great balance. And you know, Paris Saint-Germain has just had their top three up front and then just sat back and hoped that the rest of the team could defend. So I think a bit of a chastening night for Poch and his Paris boys.
Certainly is the case. I'd like to have a quick word for Sporting Lisbon as well. They are through a nice story there. They broke their 20-year league drought, of course, last season. I think they'd last won at around 2000, 2001. And for a big club, that was pretty chastening for them there in Portugal. And it's always nice when a team breaks that drought and then goes on and kicks on in Europe. And they're now through to the last 16 as well, Derek.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as Ed was saying, you know, they're not going to be one of the teams that you would typically mention. It's not going to be top of the list of people that you'd say would go through. And again, as the neutral, you want to see a mixture of clubs. You don't want them all to be English clubs or Spanish clubs or whatever. You do want to see a mixture, and you want to see some good stories too. So yeah, like all power to Sporting Lisbon, who will represent. Porto may do as well. They were pretty impressive against Liverpool. Could have nicked a couple of goals. Liverpool, though, managed to shift through the gears, and Porto will play Atletico in that last game. And yeah, it is it's mouth-watering, to say the least.
Guys, well, there is one thing I have noticed that you've failed to go into any great depth. I know you mentioned Anfield, but that Thiago goal, a veritable daisy cutter. How good is a player like that, and how deep is that squad of Liverpool that he can't get into the matchday squad for the Premier League games? It does say a lot, and I know I'm obviously biased, and someone's going to have a whack at me, particularly to Arsenal supporters who were noticeably silent in our social media communications over the weekend after the result. But in all seriousness, it was an amazing goal, and Liverpool are looking pretty dangerous in the Champions League, if not the Premier League.
Oh, well, just to pick up on the radio silence, Rob, just to refer back to previous episodes of this show, all comments like that are all just duly noted in my little black book, and we all just wait for the right opportunity to kind of dive
well, you do, but the problem, see, the thing is, I at least own up, and I step up when Liverpool do no good. You guys just don't respond; you just ignore it.
Rolling my eyes a little bit there. I mean, I felt it was slightly over the top reaction to what was quite predictable.
Look, I'm just listening to what Rob's saying, and I'm thinking of one of our most loyal listeners, Guido Trasoldi, who
yes. I thought it would go.
You talk about Liverpool way too much, Rob. So I'm just not going to respond to that, other than he thinks you talk about Liverpool too much.
Can I please just jump in there and say and get this back on track that Guido, if you are listening, I am working behind the scenes, as is Rob, and we do have something lined up for you in the coming weeks.
Yes, we do.
The Thiago and Alcantara goal was an excellent goal, Rob, to answer your question.
Yes.
He struggled to get into the side. I've read Pep Guardiola's book. He was absolutely obsessed with this player, believes that he's the perfect pivota to have in the middle of your pitch. A lot of people thought he was maybe a bit of a luxury for Liverpool, given the galaxy of riches they have in that part of the park. But, you know, to see a pure strike like that, a great camera angle in the stand highlights. Yeah, definitely, if you haven't seen it, worth watching. I thought I might move on to Premier League, Rob, because I wanted to talk about new manager bounce, because there were three new managers in the Premier League last weekend, and mostly positive. Dean Smith went 1-0 down against Southampton in his new role at Norwich against Southampton, yeah. But potentially Southampton, the perfect opposition, not the strongest side in the league. And they got two goals and they're now 19th. And for a team that were nearly down for most people, they're now 3 points from safety. Not saying they're going to stay up, but certainly it now sounds ludicrous that they were going to be written off that early. And then you had Steven Gerrard charging down the touchline Mourinho style against Brighton. And it'll be interesting to see how that one works out. I'll maybe bring Edge in on this. Out of question without notice, Edge, Dean Smith and Steven Gerrard, if you were to make a punt, who would you back to have sort of the best longevity and success out of those two in their new roles?
I think I actually caught all of Steven Gerrard's first
press conference at Aston Villa, and I started to watch it, and I thought I'll just watch the first couple of questions. But then I became engaged and enthralled, and I just want to say that I thought his performance in the press conference, Steven Gerrard, was absolutely unbelievable. And if there's ever a guy who's done an apprenticeship, firstly at Liverpool in their development structure there when he stopped playing, and then at Rangers, he took a big risk going to Rangers. They took a big risk. It paid off. He is ready. I reckon he is going to be one of the great Premier League coaches in future years. And I think it's an inspired choice by Aston Villa. And that is the long answer to your question. Steven Gerrard will have a lot more success than Dean Smith.
Okay, you heard it. You heard it here first. And well, you can't argue with his start, that's for sure. And he did what needed to be done in Rangers. Eddie Howe, of course, had to do this from his hotel room. Newcastle fans probably would have enjoyed the game from a spectacle point of view, but they are now bottom, and you know you can see there's plenty of work to do there. And Rob, probably just worth noting, and again, just thinking about our old mate Dean Hennessy, Derby County, of course, deducted further points. You know, in the period since we last spoke, they were on -3. They got back to 0, and now they're on 1 after a draw against Fulham. And this is the thing, they're a bloody good team. They beat Bournemouth and they drew against Fulham, but surely it's going to be too much. Reading about the same fate as well, but I think for Derby County, it's now looking all too likely, despite having actually a decent run of it on the pitch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but there's still plenty of games to go. I know it does seem long. Given that Reading are on 17 points and Derby County won, so it seems to be written in stone, if you like, that they are going to go down. But creditable to the players on the park at least that they're not giving up completely. All right, boys, let's wrap it up there. It's been another great show. Edge, enjoy your evening meal. Stay healthy and stay off those sports drinks. Is that what you're drinking in Bangkok? Is that what you call them?
No, just soda water for me, Rob. It's the most refreshing, cleanest drink that you can mix with your vodka, Rob.
You idiot. Willem, thank you.
Thank you, Rob. All I can say is Salam Al Dosri, what a goal. Bum, 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 bum.
Great piece. Derek, thank you, mate.
Thanks, boys.
And Damo on the buttons. Thanks again for making us sound as good as we
can. Well done, boys.
Well done, Damo. Okay, join us. Thank you for joining us this week, but join us again next week on Box to Box when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.